the day's biggest stories, the people behind the headlines, the conversations you won't hear anywhere else. I'm Christy Strasser. You're listening to Odyssey's On Deadline. The Democrats are coming. The Democrats are coming. If you want to shout that like Paul Revere and do it in his old stomping grounds, you may be in luck. Boston and Philadelphia are finalists for the big Democratic National Convention.
KYW City Hall Bureau Chief Pat Loeb has the story.
The Democratic National Committee winnowed the list of potential sites for its next convention from 6 to 3. The finalists besides Philadelphia are Boston and Denver. Philadelphia holds a strong hand, having just hosted FIFA World Cup games, the MLB All-Star Game, and multiple America 250 events. It also has a more recent track record as DNC host, having won high marks for the 2016 convention, Boston last hosted in 2004, and Denver in 2008. The 2016 convention brought an estimated $230 million in economic activity to the region. That was less than organizers had predicted, but likely helped the city land other big events.
If that seems early, you're not going to believe this. It's pumpkin spice latte season already.
And it may still feel like summer, but fall has arrived for coffee drinkers. That's right, the pumpkin spice latte is back. KCBS's Shannon Golden tested a couple of the autumn drinks at some of the chains already offering it.
We'll have to wait another week to order Starbucks's classic PSL, which launches the 25th, but Panera is already advertising its pumpkin-flavored drinks. Oh, I like the sugar crystals on that one, as is Dunkin'. It was very, very, very sweet. So I think Panera has my vote if I have to choose. I'd say I'm in the camp that feels it's just a bit too early to roll out fall just yet. But several folks I spoke with in front of both spots, like Lisa, are glad to see it back for the season.
I just came from HomeGoods and they have like all their Halloween decorations out, so I feel like I love Halloween, so I don't think it's too early. Also, in the Bay Area or in San Francisco, summertime is pretty cold, so it fits the vibe.
And it seems like a lot of people have been looking forward to it. Yelp searches for pumpkin spice latte reportedly increased by more than 300% last month.
And for American Airlines, it's back in time to 2015. The airline says it's adding seatback screens on all of its narrow-body aircraft, which it removed to save weight about a decade ago. Turns out people don't really prefer to use their own device. The new screens will have 4K displays, Bluetooth pairing for audio, and USB-C charging, that is. American is also revamping cabins and adding more premium seating.
Whether you love it or hate it, it's worth noting the pumpkin spice latte at Starbucks will set you back between $5.75 and $7.25, with exact pricing varying by your specific city, local store, and choice of hot or iced. Please don't get them on buy now, pay later programs, although it turns out that's what the U.S. has been doing with a lot of goods. Here's WCCO in Minneapolis.
The national debt has now hit a staggering $40 trillion, double where it was a year ago, says ABC's Rebecca Jarvis.
This didn't happen overnight. Under both Republicans and Democrats, the government has been spending more than it makes in taxes for 26 years on everything from health care to stimulus benefits to tax cuts and spending. And just like those credit card bills, the longer you ignore it, the worse it gets, the tougher the choices. You can think of our national debt like your own credit card. When you spend and you can't pay for it, those interest payments, they surge. And that is exactly what is happening right now. The U.S. is paying more than $1 trillion just in interest on that debt. That is more than what we spend on things like Medicare, veterans benefits, and defense. It's tough to even wrap your head around this number, but I want to put the $40 trillion in real terms. First, it makes borrowing more expensive. A new mortgage, your credit cards, those costs can and are going up. Two, it fuels inflation. And three, it makes it harder for the government to spend on things like healthcare, education, our roads, and our defense.
So, we have less money than we should as a country, thanks to massive loads of debt. Well, at least there's one thing no longer tempting our wallets. Columbia House Music is going the way of the dinosaur. Here's KCBS in the Bay Area.
Well, it's the end of an era, as decades-old mail-order music and media club Columbia House will soon cease taking new orders. Robert Thompson, professor of TV and popular culture at Syracuse University.
The old media are certainly passing into the night.
I know, it's truly the end of an era. I mean, I remember Columbia House from when I was a kid in the 90s. It introduced me to so much music that I wouldn't have found otherwise.
Well, now that's interesting to say, because in the 90s, I had kind of, my response when I first heard that this was closing was kind of like my response when someone tells me about what was on Grey's Anatomy. Is that still going? kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's interesting that in the 90s, that was still, because, of course, in the 90s, you had all these other ways of getting music. But, and I'm a lot older than you are, in the 60s and 70s, I remember that you would look, they'd have those big full-page color newspaper ads, and they would have all these titles, and all you had to do is check off the boxes, mm-hmm. and you could check 12 of them. It was like, you know, better than Christmas kind of thing. And then all you had to do is tape that penny onto the little thing you'd filled your address on. It seemed too good to be true, and of course it was. There was a business model behind all this. But to show how long this has been going, Leave It to Beaver in 1962
wow.
did an episode where Little Beaver gets in trouble. It's called Beaver Joins a Record Club, and he gets in trouble because he joins this record club, getting all this stuff for a penny or whatever, and then he doesn't buy all the other stuff he's supposed to, and a big stack of bills comes up. So already we were making fun of Columbia Record House in Record Club in sitcoms in 1962.
So, 1962, it's been around a long time. Can you talk a little bit about how it began?
Well, it starts out essentially a perfectly fine idea, a way to sell records over the mail. And Columbia Records was, of course, a record company. And then it became more efficient, and they got the rights to other record labels. They were even able to produce, I suspect, cheaper their own records, and then CDs and tapes. They went through all the different media. I was a cassette Columbia Record House kid, those little audio cassettes. So at one point, this was an over $1 billion industry, and it was distributing an awful lot of music to an awful lot of people, and some who, you know, back before the age of the internet, if you didn't live in a place with a, you know, good record store, this was a way that you could really get introduced, as you were pointing out before, to all kinds of other music. It was a very tempting sort of thing. But anyway, they had this whole deal where you got all these things for a penny or 39 cents, whatever it was at any given time. But then you were obligated to buy others over a period of time at the original prices that they were called, which were usually a lot more than you could have gotten at a local, you know, discount store.
Yeah, I remember.
If you go on there now, there's only 12 things you can get at the Columbia House website now. It's 12 old DVDs, and all of them are priced at about double what you can probably get them on Amazon.
We'll leave you with a serious thing, but one with hope.
A major breakthrough in cancer treatment, a potential melanoma vaccine. Moderna and Merck saying an mRNA vaccine showed promise in a late-stage trial dealing with melanoma. Dr. Adil Dowd, a UCSF oncologist and co-director of the Melanoma Center. What a day. What an announcement. First, before we get into your involvement with this, and we're so curious to hear this, but what's your reaction, first of all?
It's an amazing day, and it's amazing news. You know, cancer vaccines have been in testing and trials for 40 years. I mean, literally my whole career, we've been testing them. And, you know, the concept makes a lot of sense. And we know vaccines work for the flu and for COVID and stuff like that. It's just been hard to show that they work for cancer. And this is the first cancer vaccine that's shown, you know, proof of efficacy in a randomized trial where, you know, half the patients got like a placebo, half the patients got a vaccine, and there's a marked difference in the folks who got the vaccine. And, you know, from what we can tell, the side effects were pretty tolerable, similar to what you'd get with the COVID vaccine, you know, fevers, chills, soreness, but nothing beyond that. So yeah, just and if this works for melanoma, you know, we think it could work for, you know, colon cancer and breast cancer, you know, other cancers too. So yeah, pretty amazing.
You were UCSF's principal investigator for the first U.S. trial of this cancer vaccine. How long ago was that? And share what happened.
So the trial started back in, you know, early 2024. So we were the first site to open this trial in the United States. And, you know, we put... I want to say 6 patients on it. And, you know, internationally, the trial accrued a lot of patients. And I think there was over 1,000 patients on the study. So many, many patients were put on it. And, yeah, it was a pretty amazing time and a pretty amazing day.
Thank you for listening to this special presentation of Odyssey's On Deadline. Subscribe to the daily podcast on your favorite platform.